This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
In this half hour, being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, Imports Domestics Microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. And by the way, ready to drink cocktails like High Noon, Crown Royal, and Jack Daniels. All of which were needed in the previous segment with Matt. What? A's. Come on. Tell me I'm wrong, Todd.
You are not wrong.
All right. Neil Coulong, always the voice of reason, intelligence, and a good friend. Welcome, sir. I know he's there. You told me he was. There he is. I hear him. Hello, Neil.
He's there somewhere. I'm hiding out.
Somebody forgot to hit the right button.
It's good. It's great to have you on, Neil. Welcome.
As always, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Philadelphia this week. All right, so here we go. This will be the game to talk about. So the last performance against Cleveland, what did you like? What were you unsure of this deep into the season watching them play?
I like the fact, again, it's a defense that was able to create opportunities to help out an offense that it looked at times pretty overwhelmed. They're able to make plays on, you know, frankly, a quarterback who's probably lost more than just his fastball. The errant throws that Winston made, they made it pay for. And with that, they're able to kind of pull away later in the game against a team that really they should beat. So they took care of business. I think where they got to that point, unlike the last couple seasons, they're not having to fight an uphill battle late in the year. Now they've kind of established themselves, and really, with the exception of, you can make the argument, Cincinnati kind of, maybe to some degree, they've got nothing but playoff games from here on out till the end of their season.
Right.
So,
agreed.
They got this one out of the way, I think, to set themselves up. Which they were going to need to do. I mean, really, if you look at it, with the exception of Kansas City at home, this is a low-seeded run to the playoffs. You know, those are three high-level contenders in a row, with the only benefit being they get the Chiefs at home. It doesn't really seem to matter to anybody else where you play the Chiefs. Right. They're going to find a way to beat you. So it's a real tough setup of games with Cincinnati coming in the season finale. So they needed this one. They needed to have a sharp performance. They started off kind of cold, but stuck with the things that they knew were going to work, and eventually they were able to break through. They got past some adversity late. That Cordarrelle Patterson fumble didn't help things at all, but they were able to stay on schedule with what they were doing and take care of business. It's a game that a contender absolutely would win, and they'd win by, you know, two touchdowns the way that they did.
Does Wilson, because he's been there, done it, he's won a Super Bowl, he's quarterbacked in another one, is he playing like a guy with the experience that you would expect at this point?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, we get to see this every week, and I don't know if this is just like Stockholm syndrome for me or what, but when you have a team that hasn't seen good quarterback play in as long as the Steelers have, right, Wilson does stuff every week that makes you really excited to continue watching. And even with the bad starts, you have faith that he's going to be able to rebound. I think a lot of that you file under the experience umbrella. You know, there's not much that rattles him.
Right.
He stays consistent. He was playing his best in this game at the end of the game. And keep in mind, this is a defense that completely stifled him just 2 weeks ago. They figured out a way to be able to beat that. And I think a good part of it was Wilson staying on top of what he needed to stay on top of. He played good, solid football. I don't think it was his best performance overall, but what you get from him each week is, you know, it matters drive to drive. You know, he's not going to be, I mean, rough stretch there in the first half, but you know, you have faith that he's going to break through that eventually. Made some real good throws to get out of it. And with that, propelled the team in the second half. Took advantage of the takeaways that they got, which you need to do. You know, convert those into points, get another long field goal from Chris Boswell. Every little bit helps. And the cumulative effect with Wilson under center, I think, compared to the past, keeps them in games. That's the difference between, 17 points a game and 27 points a game. All three phases are making plays, and Wilson's really kind of, from what we've seen to this point, the tip of the spear in that effort.
Okay, so it's not as if they haven't faced a great running back this season. They saw Derrick Henry already. Now they have to see Saquon Barkley. Your opinion about the Steelers' run defense when they have faced a quality back?
I think we've seen them spread out a bit, open-ended down. Teams have run well on them, I think. First in 10, second in mid. They've given up plays. Linebackers, I think, have pulled in different directions. Some of that is Peyton Wilson acclimating to the role that they've asked him to play, especially on passing downs. They're getting gouged a little bit with that. And one thing that Nick Sirianni does really well, he mixes that up. Barkley, I think, is having his best year as a pro situationally,
right,
largely because the Eagles are able to do a lot of different things on a variety of downs. They're very hard to prepare for play to play, and that's going to be a challenge. Barkley obviously is an excellent talent, and he always has been. It's what Philadelphia has been able to do as an offensive team schematically sets him up for a lot of that success. They're able to get him in even running situations. They're able to put him in space, and he goes out and makes plays. So that's dangerous against anybody. I'm not 100% convinced the Steelers have an excellent run defense snap to snap. I think overall they've tended to shut down whoever it is for whatever reason it is. They get better as the game goes on. They seem to improve their looks. They get a good sense of what a team is doing. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Philadelphia come out running the ball aggressively.
Yeah.
Early in this game and really try to cut the tempo down, and from there aim to take away big plays from the Steelers' offense and make this a 16-10 type of game, which Philadelphia can win just as well as Pittsburgh can. So Barkley, I think, is the key to it all, and how they use him and what they're going to do in early downs to mix things up and get him in space into even running situations. They've made a living on this and the streak that they're on. Also a very good team at dragging teams down to the bottom of the ocean and mucking it up. Pittsburgh's right. Just like that as well. As they say, style makes fights. I think
yes.
You've got two excellent contrasting teams in that regard. I think it's going to be a really good football game.
Joey Porter Jr., and if anybody knows this is me, because obviously the hundreds of times I watched him practice as well as play games, he is an outstanding DB with speed, length, but he can be handsy. He's still handsy at this level. What kind of issues is it creating for him? Because that's a habit.
I think you're right. I think it is a habit. I think that's the way he plays the game.
I know.
I would say this. There isn't a man cornerback that has any success in the NFL that's not quote unquote handsy.
Right. That's
the
right.
Way
I agree
the game
with that.
Is played. The penalties are, in my opinion, I watch Joey Porter. What I think of is just how hyperactive he is. You know, the longer the route, it's almost like he panics. You know, he doesn't have full confidence in his athleticism, but he has a tremendous amount of confidence in his length. So he likes to keep a guy close, but it's more, I'm going to be able to make a play on the ball in the guy's hands. He's not, you know, he's not a takeaway guy. You know, you don't see him making a lot of plays on the ball where he can pick it off. It's more, I'm preventing the catch where it is. If players take him deeper down the field, it seems like he gets closer. Then he starts grabbing. I don't know how necessary it is. It's almost like at that point he's getting flagged. The inside stuff, it's tough in this league to handle these receivers nowadays. Hard slants, skinny posts, those are real tough man routes to handle with the size and speed of today's NFL receiver. And he's still getting acclimated to that. You know, I don't think it should be a big surprise. I mean, it's funny. I was just I happened to be looking into this recently, but J.C. Horn with the Carolina Panthers was a top 10 pick, high level prospect, great size, great athleticism. He's still getting knocked around a little bit. It doesn't mean that he's not potentially a very good player. It just it takes a bit sometimes with NFL cornerbacks that have those traits to really figure out how to play the game at the pro level. And a lot of it is figuring out when to let go, when to find the ball, when to know the ball is coming, get off the receiver, and go up and make a play. Porter is at that point, I think. He's got to continue to work. They believe in him. He's shown plenty of times he can be an excellent corner for four quarters. Yep. But it seems like when it rains, it pours in terms of penalties. I mean, he got his seventh penalty in six quarters before halftime against Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right.
That's insane. Yeah. That's not even the first time in his career that he's had six penalties in a game like he did last week. So, to me, it's more like he's got to learn to trust himself, his positioning and his technique. And I don't know if he has that confidence just yet.
What do you think of Jalen Hurts to this point? I mean, look, I know they're winning. I've got it. But I think you take Barkley away, and you're not going to take Barkley away. He's there. You take Barkley away, I think Philadelphia's struggling in a lot of games. Now, that's my opinion. When you watch him as more of a neutral, well, I'm a neutral observer as well because I really don't care who wins the game. But I feel like he struggles.
I think overall I would tend to agree. It's really, I mean, it's, you know, perhaps convenient, if not unfair, to say this, but if you want to look at Jalen Hurts without Saquon Barkley, look at last year. Look at the last eight games of last year. Something bad happened there. You know, that things aren't working in a lot of ways in Philadelphia. And Barkley has given them a three-down dynamic that kind of opens up everything else. Now, one might argue if you get a good all-around three-down running back, you open things up for everybody else. The struggle is the three-down, high-volume running backs don't tend to last the whole season. Teams don't get used to that, and with that, the position is kind of devalued to the point where you use multiple guys in those roles, but it's not quite the same. You can do that. You can move guys in and out. But when you have one guy who's just a killer in the run game and the pass game, your quarterback tends to get a lot better. And a large part of that is because, I mean, if we want to put this in Steelers terms, you look what happened pre-injury / contract situation to Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers to when he wasn't there. 2018, the last stand of Antonio Brown. And Antonio Brown had, I think, as far as an individual player goes, the best season of his career in 2018. He was asked to do the most. Right. He was getting blanketed down the field. And he still came up with big plays constantly. 2017, 2016, when you have Lev in there, the safety's occupied with Bell the whole time. And the reason I bring this up, it just crossed my mind. It was the 7-8 year anniversary of that 95-yard touchdown pass from Roethlisberger to Martavis Bryant against Cincinnati.
Right.
That play was, and Steelers fans love this play. It was a great play. That play was made entirely because of the motion they ran, or the play action they ran with Bell. And you see the safety coming down with the out of the formation that they're in. Ben recognized it, called for the audible, gave the play fake to Bell, and the linebacker and the safety both went to Bell. And Bryant was wide open with Leon Hall, who was like my age at that point, and Bryant absolutely fried him. When you have the running back that's able to draw that kind of attention from the back players, not the linebackers, the back players, you're opening something up. And right now, you're going to see a lot of DeShone Elliott on Saquon Barkley. You're going to have to. So if Jalen Hurts is able to make those throws, or maybe more importantly, make those reads, find the situation where he can isolate one player somewhere else and shift around everything that he needs to. And I would imagine he's got some control over that within Philadelphia's offense. Then you become a dangerous quarterback. And maybe to some degree you get more credit than you really deserve, and the running back is truly the one that's drawing a lot of that. Maybe that's what's happening in Philadelphia. I'd have to really dig in to see that. But what I know is Jalen Hurts is a very smart player. They move the ball around quite a bit. There are a lot of different guys that are able to make an impact there. When he is making those smart decisions and he's playing error-free football, they're a very difficult offense to stop. It might not be a 40-point-a-game offense, but they're potent. There's a lot of things that they can do. They can control the ball and really keep you down and out for four quarters. And that's, to me, the difference now to them is Barkley, the ability to draw in back-end coverage, back-end attention to what he's doing, opening up everything else. And with that, Hurts seems to be making the right decisions of where to go with the ball, and he's doing pretty well.
Look, the Steelers have a cushion here in the division because of what they've done and what Baltimore hasn't done. So how do you view this game as to where it fits into the scheme for the Steelers?
You want to look at it literally as far as tiebreakers go. Your NFC games are the least important beyond the obvious win and loss. In other words, if you're going to lose games, you want to lose the NFC team if you're an AFC team. A road game in the NFC team, a road game against an NFC team, against a one or two seed, you don't tend to look at that as the end of the world. But it's a litmus test, I think, against a high-level opponent in crunch time. You know, I said this before, and the schedule's changed a little bit. Maybe it's not exactly that, but by about week 11, after week 11, that's when the season starts for contenders. For the Steelers, it's going to be week 15 this year because they have a murderer's row the rest of the way, and they're going to have to figure out whether or not they're for real. Beating Cleveland at home is kind of expected if you're at the level that they are. Philadelphia is a very good all-around team, and I think with that, you want to judge how they do. I say this a lot, and I know that Joe Sweatsock, the average NFL fan, doesn't listen to it, but it's not always results-based. You got to look at how they do what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing, know what that is before you look at the outcome. So I would say this. I think there is a better-than-average chance they don't get completely boat raced the way that they did the last time they played Philadelphia. And if nothing else, that shows excellent progress. And the season's not over, win or lose this game this weekend. But the Steelers have a puncher's chance for sure. Philadelphia's a good team. I think it's going to come down to play late in it to see which of these teams can put together four quarters against a good opponent. I think Philadelphia is the same challenge Pittsburgh does.
Yeah. Is there any way to utilize beyond just everyone, like Justin Fields, or are you playing with fire because of two quarterbacks?
I think it's tough.
Yeah,
I think there are opportunities for a player of field stature, but I would argue overall, if Justin Fields was a better passer, he probably would have a starting job, whether that's in Pittsburgh or elsewhere. I'm choosing my words carefully here.
I think you're right.
For the first time since Roethlisberger's elbow snapped, there was somebody in Pittsburgh who could consistently throw the ball, and that was Russell Wilson, not Justin Fields. Fields is okay, but if you're going to put him out there, he needs to be able to do everything. And a lot of that, especially situationally, you need to be able to know where to go with the ball. And in my opinion, when Fields is on the move, as a runner, he's dangerous. As a passer, he's a liability. And with that, it becomes harder to scheme something up where it's simple, it's easy, it's a one-read thing, while still utilizing his legs. In other words, he has to be able to see everything that's happening in front of him while he's moving. I did not get a great sense of confidence unless it's a designed run, which when he's come in the game, that's what it's been. They haven't even given him a passing option to this point. There's a reason for that. If they had more confidence in him being able to throw the ball, if he was reading the field better, I think they would utilize him situationally perhaps a little bit more often than they do.
Right.
At the same time, though, we've talked about this. My thought is if Justin Fields is good enough to be able to run and throw in that situation, maybe he should be good enough to be the starting quarterback. Conversely, if Russell Wilson is noticeably worse than the backup quarterback situationally, why is he your starter? You don't want to have to answer those kinds of questions. So it's kind of...
I agree.
It's probably better off overall to stick with what you're doing and make their situational game better. You know, I know that that's simple and it's kind of coach speak, but you got to get better at what you're doing with your starter, not rely on your backup to do things you're paying your starter to do.
Right. No, I understand that because I am probably the only college broadcaster has to identify the quarterback on every play. Sometimes it's Tyler Warren, sometimes it's Bo Previola. 9 times out of 10, it's Drew Aller. So I'm only asking because I live it.
The challenges of that, I think that's an interesting side conversation. From the broadcaster's perspective, you can draw out a bit of what the coach has to do. The defensive coordinator has to do, but the coach has to prepare to do to show them all that and make sure that they're all ready to do it. Are you used to doing that? I mean, you kind of go back into like old school baseball where the relief pitcher really wasn't that big of a deal, and it was more like a guy came in relief when the starter was hurt. You know, otherwise they threw 300 pitches a game. The call it the spot quarterback, the relief quarterback. There's a sense that he's not warm. He's not into the game. He's not seeing the defense. I think there are arguments on both sides to say if you're asking him to do this one thing situationally, this is his assignment. Right. He's prepared to do it. He should be prepared to do it. It's not a 100-meter dash where you have to warm up for an hour before you do it. He should be prepared to do that. But when you add in 3 quarterbacks, different things, that's a lot for a defense. And maybe more so than the defense, the coaching staff. They have to identify all of that. That's tough to do. That's hard. I give you credit for having to do that.
It warrants the tight end. I mean, he's going to be playing in the NFL next year, but they use him sometimes at quarterback. So it's whether he's thrown some, he's run some, whatever. So it's you'd have to watch Penn State more to understand. But the question is a more of a college question than a pro question because the pros don't do what Penn State does. Neil, as always, sir, we bow to your greatness. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
The holidays are a time of year to celebrate and reflect. Reflect on the past year, a year filled with challenges and uncertainty. Uncertainty that bred resilience and hope. Hope for healing, change, new beginnings, and unity. United as one people, one community, by one mission, to safeguard and protect what matters most. From all of us at Purdy Insurance, we wish you health, happiness, and joy this holiday season, and success in the new year.